Thoughts of the Pack podcast. Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Well, hello everyone and welcome back to Pulse of the Pack. If you are a Packers fan looking forward to free agency, I imagine you are just waking up from a nap because there's not a lot of content to discuss. But anywho, we're going to try and find some talking points here and keep you guys informed and entertained and maybe have a laugh or so along the way. I am your host, Jacob Westendorf. It is raining. It is nasty. It's a gloomy Sunday. It is Selection Sunday, however, and my alma mater, the University of Wisconsin Green Bay Phoenix, will be having their name called later this afternoon. That was an exciting development for me earlier in the week, so I wanted to brag on my alma mater a little bit. Joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone. Jason, is it snowing up that far?
No, it's not even precipitating, so I guess I'm one up on you, but it is cloudy and gloomy, and except unless you are a UW Green Bay Phoenix fan, and me being from the Phoenix, Arizona area, I guess I can get behind that. It kind of takes me back to the early 90s. Jacob, you probably don't even remember this, the days of the Bennetts. And so it's exciting to make UW Green Bay basketball relevant again. But alas, yes, this is a football show. Not a whole lot to talk about as far as free agency goes, but one thing I do want to say that I'm kind of proud of is that when we hatched the idea of bringing the show, one of the things we wanted to make sure that we did was continue doing it throughout the off season. And some of our other sister shows have also been able to do a couple of shows as well. Good to be able to give the folks some content, but like you said, on the topic of free agency, it's a lot of pulling a rabbit out of a hat.
It is. And one other thing that we wanted to make sure that we did was to involve our listeners. And we have one, actually, on our show today. His name is Nathan Clark. He resides in Sacramento, California. Nate, introduce yourself. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys today?
Oh, we're doing very well. We're excited to have you on the show. For those of you guys that don't know, when we made our new Twitter handle, which is @PackerPulse, Nate was the most frequent of interaction that we've had. So kind of what we're trying to do here is get a sense of, if you interact with us, you know, maybe we want to hear your opinions too. So we have Nate on the show today. Nate, what we want to start with is kind of, you know, most of the people that listen to the show know us, but they do not know you. So, you know, go ahead, give us a, you know, kind of a blurb. Who are you? How long have you been a Packers fan? Who's your favorite player? You know, things of that nature.
Yeah, well, I've been a Packers fan since probably 94, 95, when I could walk and talk and throw a football. I saw a green number 4 on the TV and him running around and Favre throwing bombs and throwing deep passes to Robert Brooks and all those guys. It hooked me. And then later on, I found out my grandfather that lives out of Loyalton up towards the Reno area, he's actually a shareholder and was born out in Madison. So it was a weird kind of family connection I end up finding out. But myself, I coach I've been coaching youth football at the 14U level for about 7 years now. So I've been heavily involved in a game in my life. So when you start, when you get to the sideline and you take the pads off, it's a completely different aspect. And that's why I wanted to interact with you guys so much and see my point of view. And it's crazy when you take the gear off and realize, you know, there's so much other stuff going on than what you see on TV and when you're trying to play the game.
Absolutely. That's something I am passionate about as well, is the coaching side of things, which is why I tend to think we get along so well. Well, that and, you know, the Packers thing's kind of a big deal as a whole. So, you know, what we kind of want to start with, this is the off season. I do have one bit, actually, and one nice part about recording these shows live is you can get breaking news. According to several media outlet reports, Casey Hayward has signed to play in kind of your area there, Nate, the San Diego Chargers. 3 years,
oh, wow.
$15 million. Casey Hayward
15?
Is a San Diego Charger. Yes, $15 million. So $5 million a year. Jason, let's start with you. What's your reaction to Casey Hayward playing for the San Diego Chargers?
Enjoy the sunshine, Casey. And thank you for four okay years in Green Bay. I mean, he peaked as a rookie, had that great 2012 season. I think he was leading the league in interceptions at one point. I was actually fortunate enough to be in the stands for his first pick. And after his first season, I thought, you know, that might be a moment to remember if he ends up being a longtime Packer and he is known for taking the ball away. And I can say I saw his first interception, but unfortunately the following 3 years kind of proved to be pretty disappointing. And then last year, Ted Thompson went cornerback in the draft, brought in Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins, and they've got a lot of defensive backs back there, and so the writing was kind of on the wall. Somebody was probably not going to be back, and it looks like, well, now we know it's Hayward. He is headed to the Chargers and the AFC. I guess it's, you know, the silver lining there is at least he's not playing within the division, but not too surprised. I think it would have been a long shot for Hayward to come back. And so we crossed that off of our list of guys to talk about today, I guess. But good job with the breaking news there, Jacob.
Yeah, I'm piggybacking off several people when I do that. But anywho.
Yeah, I was going to say, where are your sources at on that one?
well, it appears that Adam Schefter, I am not, however. Nate, you've jumped in a couple times here. Let's go ahead and give your – you sounded surprised at the amount of money he made. Did you think that there was a chance he was coming back, or what was your thoughts on the deal?
My thoughts initially are he's getting paid, I would say, probably what Green Bay might have paid him, 3 years, 15. I still think five mil a year is a little high for him. I always felt he was a tad undersized at his position, and I felt he kind of was just over – I guess kind of like he just got dominated a little bit physically on the field. And it's his play to me got frustrating as the years went by with his time here in Green Bay. Like his rookie season was phenomenal. And I think that kind of put the target on him for offensive coordinators and head coaches to game plan against him. And then he couldn't stay healthy. He had that hamstring issue and he couldn't get back on the field. I want to say maybe – I think it was his second season. He just couldn't get back on the field. So I don't blame Ted Thompson for maybe not pulling the trigger on him and, you know, reloading the secondary up in the draft because they got two studs. Quentin Rollins is going to be a stud. I'm really, really high on that guy.
I am as well. One thing, I guess my initial reaction is I think that money states that Casey Hayward is a slot corner and he got slot cornerback money. Not boundary cornerback money. As far as slot corners go, I think he's pretty good. You know, his numbers last season, although he didn't have the interceptions, Bill Huber laid out quite a few numbers that he had last year that went pretty well. You know, his quarterback rating against wasn't very high. He just didn't get his hand on the ball, which is, you know, frustrating because corners, splash plays are what we see, you know, to the naked eye without watching the film and all that stuff. But, you know, like I said, I can't blame him. You know, the writing was kind of on the wall when they signed, when they drafted Quentin Rollins, Demarius Randall. They also have, Ladarius Gunter that they seem to like as an undrafted player. They always add a guy in the draft as well, or undrafted free agency. So only disappointing because you've become invested in a player like that over a period of time. But overall, not a lot of complaints. The writing was on the wall for him. But that is our breaking news part of the day. To start this segment, Jason and I have talked about this a little bit. Nate, the way Ted Thompson has approached free agency this year is not that different from any other year. What are your feelings on the way he's approached free agency this year specifically, though?
Well, this year, specifically this year, it, to me, is a little bit head-scratching. There was a few guys out on the market that I thought could have been instant upgrades. I know you were talking Trevathan, the inside backer that was from Denver that signed in Chicago, and then his presser a few days after he signs the deal saying, hey, why didn't Green Bay answer the phone? He would have been an instant upgrade. And I believe they still ran a 3-4 system after John Fox left Denver. So, I mean, he would have been a plug-and-play, instant upgrade for this defense. And Matt Forte getting a $12 million deal in New York, he's only 30 years old. I mean, I know the rumor mills are always a little bit too far-fetched, but, I mean, you got Julius Peppers over here who is still close to Matt Forte. I think Matt Forte would be an excellent fit in this offense, and I'm really, really kind of scratching my head on why Ted Thompson doesn't, pull the trigger or at least get 75% of the way in on these deals when it hits, when the clock strikes 1 p.m. on the new league year. It's head-scratching for this season because I felt there's a few guys, the offensive guard from Baltimore, I can't recall his name, who signed in Oakland. That guy would have been an instant upgrade on this offensive line. And as you guys know, I'm not crazy about our offensive line at all. I think it puts me in almost a heart attack every time 12 drops back. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I understand. The name you're looking for is excuse me if I butcher it, but it's Kelechi Osemele.
There we go.
Not sure if he's going to play left tackle, left guard, right guard. I even heard somebody, I think, tell me that they said he was going to play center. You kind of answered my second question I was going to ask you about specific contracts. You mentioned Matt Forte, Danny Trevathan. One other one I would add to that is Ladarius Green. I think actually of all the contracts, that's the one it's the Packers' biggest need on offense, at least in my opinion. And he signed what turned out to be a relatively reasonable contract considering the tight end market this year has been relatively ridiculous. But one of my favorite sayings is there's no sense crying over spilled milk. The Packers are going to not be able to sign Danny Trevathan or Matt Forte or Ladarius Green. So, Jason, I'll start with you on this. Who of the remaining players that are available, theoretically, whether you've heard them mentioned on the trade market or still available in free agency, who of those remaining players is your personal favorite potential target for the Packers?
So I kind of like to approach each offseason with a clean slate. We know what Ted Thompson's kind of his patterns are, what he does and doesn't do. He doesn't spend splashy money on the first couple of days of free agency. So we're a little less than a week in. It's still early in the process, I guess I would say, more earlier than not. But with most of the impact players now off the market, I don't think there's anybody who's a true free agent right now that even occurs to me that I think would be worth pursuing for the Packers. I guess if I had to go back, maybe if they think Jared Cook, the tight end that was cut by the Rams, is a good fit, I'm not convinced that he's a huge upgrade. And that's relative compared to what the Packers are working with right now. They've got Richard Rodgers, who, as we know, has no speed at all. And Andrew Corliss is probably not coming back. They tendered Justin Perillo, so Justin Perillo will be back. And they're going to keep Kenard Backman because he's a special teams player. But I don't know if he's poised to start to garner a role for himself in the offense. And none of those guys are proven nor really exciting when you think about the offense and the tight end position. So Jared Cook maybe in terms of guys who are out there right now. But, Jacob, it's a favorite you and I have talked about several times, and I think at this point right now the only player that would really kind of get the juices flowing for me would be if the Bears aren't able to trade Martellus Bennett. They have to cut him because he just doesn't want to play there anymore, and it's just a, you know, it's a marriage gone bad. He's on the streets then, and Green Bay is free to sign him, and of course that obviously plays well into the equation when they determine compensatory picks next year for the free agents that the Packers lost this year, because obviously guys who get cut by their previous team do not count against you when you pick them up. So, and that was one of the reasons, another one of the big reasons too, why I don't know how much the Packers really even inquired into the whole Matt Forte thing. You know, he was more of a name than a guy that I think was going to really help the offense. They've got Lacy already. He would have been a very expensive and probably underutilized for the type of contract that he would have gotten back. But so I'll go Bennett at tight end. And I can tell you this, if the Bears don't cut him, if he stays there for some reason, actually I kind of, you know, would pay to see that reality TV show. But if they do let him go and he doesn't end up in Green Bay, after the riots are over with and all the fires have been put out by the Green Bay Fire Department around town, I am going to be morbidly curious to see what Ted Thompson and the scouting department's, the personnel department's plan is at the tight end position, because we know that the draft is not very, very thick at that position. And even if it were, you're still asking a kid to come in from college, transition to the pro game, and make a huge impact, which is never a guarantee. And there aren't any guys in this draft that really fit that bill. So that would be it for me. It'd be Bennett. You know, I'd take a flyer on Cook, but muted expectations with him. Outside of that, I don't really have any others.
Fair enough. Nate, you mentioned a couple other – well, actually, you didn't mention a couple others. I'm going to allow you to do that now. Jason mentioned Jared Cook, Martellus Bennett. You got somebody outside of those guys?
You know, the only other guy that if he was still available would be Ladarius Green. I know he's a really good, raw, you know, talented player, and he sat behind Antonio Gates for a while. But I'm still kind of agreeing with Jason. It's if Martellus Bennett, I think, is Green Bay's is option, and TT, he needs to pull the trigger on this one, because we don't need the Green Bay Fire Department to put out any fires anymore, because I'm afraid 12's window is starting to close on us, and I don't want to see this team go through another phase like it happened in the late 90s, where we're not getting these guys that can be instant upgrades like a Martellus Bennett. I mean, that guy can stretch the field, and that's what we didn't have last season. Clearly, with Nelson out, we just didn't have that extra guy to stretch the field. But yeah, I was really hoping for Ladarius Green. I was really hoping for him. But the only other one I would see would be Martellus Bennett. But he's got to make it happen.
And that is contingent on the Bears releasing him, because I would say there's probably a snowball's chance in hell that Ryan Pace would trade him and that Ted Thompson would trade a draft pick. I'm not sure which is more unlikely, to be honest with you. But as far as remaining players that I have, I've been on the Martellus Bennett train for quite some time. Mike McCarthy in his postseason press conference said that, you know, he's looking for big targets in the middle of the field. Well, Martellus Bennett is a big target that runs through the middle of the field, and I've seen him play in person a couple times when the Bears came up here, and I swear he torched Micah Hyde for a living. It was ridiculous how big and fast and strong, and he's a good blocker, and he really is kind of at full potential what JerMichael Finley was for this offense. He's good after the catch. He's got some head case type issues. I'm sure some fans up here won't like him very much because of his attitude or his antics or whatever, but this guy could play. He'd be a hell of a red zone target. He could stretch the seam. He's a dynamic tight end, and the Packers don't have a dynamic tight end. Outside of him, I would say DeMario Davis, the inside linebacker, is one. Another one is Zach Brown, former linebacker of the Tennessee Titans. He's not exactly a plug-and-play type, if you will. You know, it's not the instant upgrade that Danny Trevathan would be. But he does have some speed. He does have some ability to cover guys. He had a very good coverage rating last year, according to the analytics. So, and I'm big into those things. Don't necessarily think it's the Bible, but I do like the what the numbers at least can say as far as that goes. So his numbers translate well. I think that Zach Brown could be a asset in this defense, a chess piece, if you will. So those are the guys that I have as far as those that remain. Guys that I don't really want to hear much about anymore, James Laurinaitis is one. I think that he's older. He's not an athlete. He never even was in his prime as far as the chase-type linebacker that the Packers need. And Owen Daniels is another one. God bless Owen Daniels. He was a good player for the Wisconsin Badgers. He's been a good player. But the Packers have a player like Owen Daniels. His name is Richard Rodgers. I think he helps a little bit in the aspect of he'd probably replace Andrew Corliss. The Packers don't need a player like Andrew Corliss. They need a player like JaMychal Finley. Those are a couple names that I don't really want to hear too much about anymore. I think that they'd help a little, but it wouldn't be the upgrade that most fans are hoping for at that position. But one other thing I was going to ask, the original question was, would you bring back Rodgie or Hayward? But it appears bringing back Hayward is not an option anymore. So B.J. Rodgie is the last, quote, big available free agent for the Packers. What do you think here, Nate? They re-signed LaTroy Guyon, obviously. Would you bring back B.J. Rodgie at this stage?
You know, at this stage, if the money's right, I would pull the trigger only because he's familiar with the system. He didn't have, you know, a crazy, crazy statistical season last year. But, I mean, he knows the system. He plays hard. He was fairly healthy throughout the whole season up until, I think, was week 16 in Arizona. I think he got a concussion from Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. You know, go figure, our own teammates are getting concussions. And if the money's right, but this year's draft seems pretty deep in D-line and ends and D-tackles. I wouldn't be mad if he doesn't come back, but I believe he played out a one-year $4 million deal this past season. So if we're sitting anywhere from maybe $3 to $5 million, I mean maybe even $4.5 is stretching it, I'd be okay with it. But they definitely got to get younger up front, and Mike Pinnell is going to be leading this D line. I can almost guarantee from this season moving on, he's going to be the anchor. So at this point I would say maybe let that ship go on Raji, but I wouldn't be too bummed if he doesn't come back. But it's still kind of, what are we going to get? Are we going to get an injury case, or are we going to get a guy like his rookie season comes in and, you know, gets 3 or 4 sacks, you know, stops the run, holds it down. But with him, you never know because of his injury, you know, his injury case all the time.
Rodgie's probably the most interesting of the group just because of the depth at the position. Most people kind of considered Hayward to be a goner as soon as they drafted those guys. I mentioned that earlier. But, Rodgie, he's a guy they drafted. He's at a position that they value. You can see that they value it. But at the same time, they paid LaTroy Guyon, and I would imagine, you know, if they're paying him the way they are, they want him to be on the field. It's going to be hard to justify putting that much money on the bench, I would think. But it appears also that Rodgie hasn't gotten a lot of interest on the open market. So with that being the case, I would say at this juncture, you know, if the price is going to be at Guyon's deal or cheaper, sure, bring him back. And then when you draft a guy, I've talked about this before, you draft a defensive lineman. Now instead of replacing a guy like B.J. Rodgie that was your starter a season ago, now you're replacing Josh Boyd. And potentially if, you know, one of their plans, as I think, if one of their plans is moving Daytone Jones around, you're also replacing him. I think the Packers could definitely use a defensive lineman like B.J. Rodgie on their roster if they're replacing Boyd or Ringo or somebody like that with a draft pick. If nothing else, depth on the defensive line is never a bad thing. And I think we've seen that over time. You know, there was a year, I think it was 2011, the Colin Jenkins year, as I affectionately refer to it. Packers lost Colin Jenkins. They didn't have a lot of depth on their defensive line. Mike Neal was kind of their plan to be Jenkins' replacement, and he was either injured or ineffective, and the Packers were the worst defense in football that year. And that wasn't the only reason why, but they didn't have depth on the defensive line that year to withstand the loss of Colin Jenkins and then Mike Neal. So always have depth in your big guys. I think that that's something that's pretty pretty normal. Jason, what do you think on the B.J. Raji front before we go go into our draft discussion here?
Well, so I have a question for Nate. Nate, I know you're on the coaching side of things, so are you more of an offensive mm-hmm. guy or a defensive guy?
Defense.
Okay, so one of the things you mentioned, which is true, is that Raji didn't have statistically a very flashy season. And I think that's often the case with nose tackles, especially in a 3-4, because of what they're asked to do. You don't see a ton of stats from them, although he did end up with 6 sacks in 2010, which we all like to point back to. But just from a coaching perspective, what are you looking for? To tell the other listeners out there, when you're talking about a guy that's not a receiver, he's not around the ball, obviously you can't point to how many touchdowns he had or how many times he touched the ball. How do you evaluate a player and whether he's being successful or not when you don't have a lot of numbers, when you're looking at the defensive lineman and determining, hey, do we want to bring this guy back? Do we not want to bring this guy back? What kind of things do you kind of look at from your coaching perspective when he's out there to kind of, you know, set his value?
First of all, we would look at interior D alignment since the subject is on Raji. I would be looking at gap control. If he can hold down both A gap and not get pushed around, that's my first key. When I look at a player and see what he can do at that spot, if he can control both A gaps, that's huge, because that can open up for your blitzing, that can open up for other D linemen, your ends, whatever you know front you guys run. In our case, it's the 3-4. Raji just needs to be able to continue to hold control the A gaps and not get pushed backwards. I like to compare D lines on the Packers right now, and when we look into the future, is those Seattle and those San Francisco teams that Green Bay can never get past in the playoffs. Their D line was so stout and strong, they didn't get pushed around. So when I look for a D lineman, I look to see, is this guy going to be get pushed around? And if Raji can continue to hold that A gap and those interior gaps and control it, and get in the backfield and make a few stops for a few tackles for loss, that's what you want to start seeing in his progression as well. So if he can continue to do that, I want to say he's 30 or 31 now. He's about the same age as Clay Matthews. Are we going to get that same out of him? Is he going to have another kind of borderline year? We don't know with him. But yeah, as far as a coaching stance, I'm looking if he can control it up front and be stout. That's the first and foremost thing for me.
Okay. He's also been described sometimes as a little bit, I use the term lazy. I don't think he's an overall lazy player, but sometimes lacks motivation are things that have been used to describe him, or maybe takes a play or two off here or there. Have you seen any evidence of that in your opinion as you watch him play?
I would say that assumption is somewhat correct. We can't follow every player, throughout the game. I can't focus on every single body. I can go back on the tape and watch it. But, I mean, he does seem like a guy that doesn't really have a crazy motor and a crazy tempo. So I would say the rumor mill on him taking a play off here and there is probably correct, in my mind.
Yeah, so, I mean, with all that kind of considered, I think the way it looks right now, and the fact that free agency, the huge, juggernaut that was going on the first couple of days has definitely come to a little bit of a close. I feel like that every day that passes is another day that B.J. Raji is closer to coming back to the Packers, and I think at a price that's going to be very team-friendly. So my short answer with all that kind of thrown in there is, if he can be effective, and I think he still can because he knows the defense, he's probably a safer option for another couple of years than somebody that they might potentially bring in. But, Jacob, like you said, if someone's there on the board when they pick, they should absolutely bring them in. And instead, you know, like you said, instead of replacing Rod, you replace some of those guys in the bottom of the depth chart. You know, Nate, you mentioned Mike Pinnell. Unfortunately, he's going to miss some time this season, and hopefully this is kind of a blip on the radar for him, and he can come back and be a productive member of the defensive line. But it looks to me like he's back, and I you know, I've been kind of waving the flag to bring him back since the beginning. I'd be fine with it, and at this point, I think it'll get done, and it'll probably get done at a number that's pretty workable for the Packs. So that's my take on that whole thing. I think 90's back, and I think he'll be a better contributor than would be somebody who's younger, who I think they might have targeted maybe in the first round. So another year of show me what you got, Raji. See if he can get his hands on a ball for once and take a pick back into the end zone before he potentially departs next year or the year after that.
You mean again, of course.
Again, yes.
Yes, again. Okay. You mentioned, you know, the absolutely pick a guy if he's on the board. To me, that means even if it's pick number 27, which is, of course, the Packers' first-round pick. Nate, you know, I don't – based on your answer from evaluating B.J. Raji, I would imagine this also makes you some sort of a draft guy, which is something I'm pretty passionate about as well. But overall, you know, the Packers obviously have the 27th pick. There's been some names mentioned – connected to them potentially at that pick in the first round. But, you know, for starters, I guess, what do you see as their biggest needs early? And who are some guys that you like early on in the draft for the Packers?
Well, I would say starting out with Ted Thompson, it almost seems like every year ESPN and NFL Network and those shows that talk about his philosophy, it seems like to me it changes. One year we'll hear, oh, he goes best guy, you know, best remaining player on the board. Or, you know, then this year he goes, oh, you know, Ted Thompson, drafts for needs, or, you know, then he doesn't draft for needs. In my mind, this team needs desperately quality protection for Aaron Rodgers, first and foremost. And then if he can get dial that in, I see they need a second option to stretch the field. Like you were saying earlier, you know, run the seam route, get the opposing defense stretched out. And other than that, I would say they need to get a game changer at the inside linebacker position. I'm really, really big on Jake Ryan. I think he is a step above what A.J. Hawk was at Jake Ryan's age right now. But, I mean, they really need to get a game changer. So I can see them going in a few different directions. A few guys that I like right now, Reggie Ragland from Alabama, the inside linebacker. I watched his pro day. Guy can play some football. I like also like LaRaven Clark, an offensive tackle, not because of last name or nothing. he's offensive lineman out of Texas Tech. This guy is a day one starter in my mind. He's got the size, he's got the numbers, as far as arm length, if you want to go into that detail of it. The guy is a good solid offensive tackle, and you know, with Bulaga. You guys brought it up on a few weeks ago. Bulaga, we're almost guaranteeing he's going to miss, 2 to 4 games a season. So maybe when I say let's get actual quality guys up front to keep Aaron Rodgers upright, because I don't, you know, sometimes after Sunday afternoon, I feel bad for Aaron. He's taking a pounding, you know, most Sundays. But, you know, that's the position, though. But I like those guys. Another guy I think is a dark horse for Green Bay and could be a little bit of a sleeper impact is Kevin Dodd, defensive end out of Clemson. Not because he had 4.5, 5 sacks in the national championship game. I watched his pro day workout as well. Kevin Dodd is a very, very good athlete. Very, very limber. He bends well. He moves good for the position and his size. I think he would be a really good upgrade, and I think he could be a very good contributor in a rotational defense like Dom Capers likes to do with those ends and those outside backers. I would say he might have a little bit more of a better career than maybe his teammate Shaq Lawson, I believe, because I watched both on their pro day, and I liked Kevin Dodd a little bit more. I think for Green Bay's front, he can do a lot.
One name you mentioned specifically, and it's something I've noticed quite a bit of, it's something that I understand it to some degree, but I also do not. The first name out of people's mouth, in my opinion, for inside linebacker for the Packers, this is also with the understanding that Miles Jack is going to be well off the board, and that mm-hmm. you know, Jalen Smith may or may not be able to be taken. But the name for me is Darren Lee, and I thought that before the combine when he ripped it up. I think I've made it relatively known that I think the Packers need an athletic player, a chase linebacker type at that spot. This isn't to knock Ragland's athleticism or anything like that. I do think he's a good football player as well. However, the preference I have, for example, in some fantasy world where both of those linebackers are on the board, I take Darren Lee, and I don't hesitate all that much. And again, that's nothing against Reggie Ragland, because I think he can be a good football player as well. But is there a reason you have a preference of Ragland over Darren Lee in this case?
Well, I like Ragland simply because of the type of defense and everything that Nick Saban runs. I believe Nick Saban is a heavy, heavy defensive guy. I know he did a lot of secondary coaching in his time in the NFL before the whole Dolphins Dolphins massacre that happened with him. And I think Ragland would be a day one insert to the defense and be an upgrade like Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. So, I mean, that's why I'm just leaning a little bit more towards Nick Saban pumps out pro-ready guys. I know it could be a little biased, but, you know, I'm pretty comfortable with how Ha-Ha Clinton Dix has produced and played. That's my only kind of preference when you compare those two ball players.
Fair enough. It's just, you know, I've never gotten a really good, solid answer from some people, so at least you provided that for me. Nate,
yeah.
we want to let you know we appreciate you coming on the show here. Guys, if you guys want to give him a follow, appreciate his insight. His Twitter handle is, let me make sure I get this right, is @CoachNate71. He tweets pretty often, actually, so you can find some good insight from him. I'm sure as football players and stuff, guys, listen to him. He knows what he's talking about. Take it from a celebrity here, and I say that in full jest. But go ahead, give our guy a follow here. Nate, we appreciate your time. Keep listening to the show, as always. Hopefully we can have you back on again sometime.
Will do. I appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks for taking your time, and hopefully I can be back on soon.
Thanks, absolutely. Nate. Go Pack, go.
Go Pack, go. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
That was Nate Clark. And if you want to be like Nate, all you have to do is interact with us on the Twitter machine. If we see enough interaction and things of that sort, we can have you on the show. Nate, once again, if you're still listening, we appreciate your time, appreciate your effort, appreciate your insight. But we have more things that we need to talk about. First and foremost, the Packers gained two compensatory picks. That was a bit of news. 131 and 137. They have six picks in the top 140. That is one of the reasons that Ted Thompson tends to sit out free agency. I tend to think it's a little overrated just for the simple reason of a compensatory pick shouldn't be the biggest reason that you sit out on a player that could be a contributor, but that's my opinion. We want to look ahead here. Obviously, we know I take that back. One other bit of news, Nick Perry, 1 year, $5 million, he re-signed with the Packers. That was Thursday of this week, so Packers haven't been completely dormant as far as free agency goes. Jason, I guess that's where I'll start here then. The Nick Perry contract, it's a one-year deal, so does that mean the end of Mike Neal? And what do you make of the overall lack of interest in Neil or Raji, and really until today, Casey Hayward?
I was clamoring for Perry over Neil if it was one or the other. So I was happy to see them bring Nick Perry back. I think if he's healthy, he offers more to the defense. The health factor, obviously, is anything but certain with him. I was surprised that it was a one-year deal and that he took it at this point. So that means that there must not have been a ton of interest from around the league for him, because if any other team is talking to him at all and talking multiple years, I don't think he signs with the Packers for a one-year deal this soon. Maybe eventually towards the latter part of the free agency period, but I think to me that says there wasn't a lot of interest outside of Green Bay, and I don't know if that was just the concerns about his health, if teams just, you know, are worried about his availability, and he's most valuable to Green Bay because they, you know, he's the commodity that they know. So obviously with that being the case, with Perry being the choice, then it makes sense why there haven't been any conversations with Mike Neal or any news on Mike Neal. He could very well still be back, because if they're going to move Clay Matthews outside, obviously they're going to need some depth. I mean, I think that's not going to be a full-time move. I just don't see it happening, especially if they're not going to go inside linebacker with an impact player in this draft. And even if they do end up with like a Lee or a Ragland, I don't know that the you know, Green Bay is not the type that are going to throw those guys out there on day one and throw them into the wolves and let them start necessarily. Inside linebacker is kind of an interesting position. You think your first rounders, you know, if you pick a first rounder, they should be starting and playing right away. But at that position, you're kind of almost the quarterback of the defense. You're doing a lot. There's a lot of assignments that are involved. So I don't know if they'd necessarily start somebody there. So I do think Clay is going to end up on the inside a little bit, which means they're going to need some depth at the outside, which is another area that they could get after in the draft. You know, pick up some inside guys, pick up some outside guys. You know, you got guys like Andy Malumba who haven't been too overly effective. We'd love to see more Jay Elliott on the field, Jayron Elliott, but he didn't play a bunch last season, so I don't know if that was mostly injury related or if there's just something about him that doesn't jive with the defense for him to play more snaps. So, you know, bringing a Neal back, I think, would just help from a knowledge of the defense and a depth perspective. But I mean, that would just strictly be for depth, because his effectiveness is, you know, he benefited from the work some of the other guys on the defense did last year. I feel like he benefited a lot from what Mike Daniels did up front, from what Clay was able to do from the middle, and he kind of came in and cleaned some things up. So as far as Neal goes, that's kind of explained by the deal that Perry got. Now, Casey Hayward, I think the biggest thing there was, I think the Thompson and the Packers probably felt like he was looking for big money, because he played on the outside. He started on the outside last season. He has said this entire offseason, you know, free agency period, that he's wanting a chance to be an outside corner. But, you know, obviously the money that he got indicates that he's more of an inside corner. And that might have scared Green Bay away a little bit in terms of, well, what do we think we're going to have to pay this guy? I think they felt comfortable with what they had in Quentin Rollins and Demarius Randall. And it would have taken Hayward not getting any interest and coming down to the end of the period for him to start having conversations with Green Bay in terms of coming back to their defense. So that's kind of how I see that whole thing playing out there. And obviously it's a moot point now, because Hayward's on his way to San Diego to join the Chargers, but the Packers will be just fine. I think the biggest thing now is Raji. What are they going to do with B.J. Raji on the defensive line? And then, you know, at linebacker, they're going to go draft to try to build some depth there. Mike Neal comes back fine, but at this point with Perry back, let him go.
Well, you stole some of my thunder there, because it's something I've been thinking about for a little while, and that is the inside linebacker position, because obviously, you know, Mike McCarthy has said they want Clay Matthews to get back outside. I understand that. However, if there is not a player that they get that is worthy of moving Matthews back outside, they already moved him inside. They can just keep him there. And I think that they would, if they don't find somebody that they deem able to play that position and play it well. I don't think that they would just throw Matthews back outside. And I'd like to think that Sam Barrington and Jake Ryan is not what they deem an able linebacking unit. And I think that you kind of saw some of that last year, because when Matthews would bump outside, it was Joe Thomas that was coming in to be the coverage guy. And the reason that they could afford to do that in some sub packages is because they had Matthews inside on first and second down. So if they do pass on first and second down, you can have Matthews play coverage, and he's able to run with guys, whereas guys like Barrington or Ryan are not. Not as well, at least, I should say. As far as the other stuff goes, yeah, Hayward, it wasn't surprising to see him go. Mike Neal, I think that you're better off moving on. Jayrone Elliott, I think, is going to be willing and able to get more playing time. I think that Dayton Jones is going to be a guy there. Andy Malumba wasn't tendered. I think that the Packers could very easily select an outside backer. Our guy Nate mentioned one in Kevin Dodd. He's a guy who could play inside or out. Leonard Floyd is a player my buddy Ross from the benches has talked up to me quite a bit. He's one guy. And one troubled guy I'm going to talk about, and I'm going to bang the table quite a bit for him, is Noah Spence. If Noah Spence is there at 27, I think you have to take a long, hard look at bringing him in, because not only do you have to add depth for this season, but Julius Peppers and Nick Perry are both at the end of their deals. You have to start rebuilding that position. The Packers need outside linebackers, and that's a potential impact player. I'm not sure that you can afford to pass on a guy like that. As far as the Nick Perry contract went, like you said, Jason, you know, I was Perry over Neal all the way. I think that Perry still has potential to be a very good player if he can just stay healthy. You know, the biggest problem with him is he builds momentum, he gets hurt. He builds momentum, he gets hurt. We didn't get hurt last year because he started building momentum in the Packers' last two games of the season. And one other thing I'm happy about the Perry re-signing for is my NFP reference can live for one more year. I think anybody with a brain can figure out what that means. But I want to move on here because free agency has been active in the NFC North, just not by the Packers. The Packers have re-signed Nick Perry, and that is the only move that they've made of significance. The Chicago Bears have signed two inside linebackers. Danny Trevathan was signed the first day of free agency, and then just yesterday, Jarrell Freeman also inked a three-year deal with the Bears. Marvin Jones is now at Detroit Lion. They signed him on the first day of free agency as well. He got paid a lot of money. And for some reason, Mike Silver seems to think that Ted Thompson should have gone out and signed Marvin Jones. His whole rant didn't make any sense whatsoever. For those of you guys that saw that on NFL Network, he basically said that Ted Thompson sits on his hands in free agency, which is a common criticism, but the moves he brought up were not trading for Marshawn Lynch in 2010, which was, by the way, a year they won the freaking Super Bowl. And the other one was that they could have signed Marvin Jones. Well, the Packers weren't going to spend big money on a wide receiver. That was just never going to happen. And Marvin, whatever. Anyways, rant over. Jason, I want to get back to the question here. The question I'm getting is, have the teams in the NFC North done enough, you think? I know the Vikings won the NFC North last year, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a lot of people that think, with a healthy Jordy Nelson, that the Packers were not the team. And the Packers were the team in the NFC North that advanced the furthest in the postseason as well, gave the Cardinals a run. I think that even though the Vikings have the division crown, I think the Packers are the better team. So do you think that those teams have done enough to catch the Packers? And really the Vikings haven't made a lot of moves either. So catch the Packers and the Vikings. So the Lions and Bears, have they caught up at all? What do you think?
Well, as a disclaimer I always like to make at this time of year is that we don't know what's going to happen this early on. I mean, it's March, so we're months away from them even putting pads on and practicing against each other, let alone playing competitive games against the league. So, and there's still time for other teams to make some moves. I think the Bears have been aggressive. They've had a lot of cap space to play with. They're clearly dedicated towards going younger and trying to change the makeup of their team. They're focusing on defense. You mentioned they brought in two linebackers. They signed two linebackers in free agency, which, you know, a lot of, as the days go on and everybody looks at the Trevathan contract because he was the biggest name from the inside linebackers that guys wanted Thompson and the Packers to look at. You know, fans are getting increasingly more and more frustrated because they feel like, well, they had the cap space and that's a deal that totally could have worked, so why didn't they do it? We have to wait and see what the overall plan is. We don't know what that is. I mean, that could be Ted tipping his hand a little bit that they're going to go with a linebacker in the draft and draft one sooner than later. Don't forget they have Jake Ryan. I know Jake Ryan's not a world beater, but they like him. They also have Sam Barrington, who missed all of last season. He only played, I think, in the first game, and they liked him the year prior. He also not a world beater, but they might feel like those guys are good enough to get them by. We've seen Ted sit idle at a position we felt like he needed to address, and then he didn't do it at all. Now, in some cases, that works out. You mentioned 2010. They didn't get the trade done for Marshawn Lynch, which, by the way, they did try, I think, to get Lynch. They just didn't win the bid. So it's not like he didn't even throw his name in the hat. They just didn't win the bid. You know, I think Ted Thompson liked Marshawn Lynch coming in 2007. I think the Packers may have very well drafted him had Buffalo not snatched him up one or two slots prior. And then the disaster was Justin Herald happened. So, you know, those types of guys, you know, in that case, it panned out and it was fine. You look at some of these other names that are out there too, and it's hard to determine what kind of impact you're going to get. I mean, I'm one of those that would like to see Trevathan play outside of Denver because I think he's a good football player. I just don't know if he's a huge impact player, and he's, you know, he's making some pretty good money. He's making some pretty good money. I mean, he's you know, as Jason Hirschhorn, you know, my good friend and a friend of the show, he's been on a couple times, has said, you know, he's a non-premier off-the-ball player, and he's making six or mil or above. That's a pretty hefty contract. I know that he said, you know, that he wished the Packers would have called, but they didn't. It's just not – it's not the M.O. of Ted Thompson, unless it's somebody that he absolutely loves, didn't get to draft – and there's a tie there somewhere. So, I think the Bears probably more than anybody just by the sheer number of moves that they've made, but they've gone all in at linebacker in free agency, and I think obviously that means the end of Shea McClellan in Chicago, so he's probably headed out, which after the 2013 season, Packers fans are probably very okay with him moving along because he only seems to make plays against the Packers. Otherwise, he does nothing. So, and then as far as the Lions go, yeah, you know, Marvin Jones, I kind of laughed when the report came out that suggested the Packers might be a player in free agency for a receiver at all because they're just so deep at the position. And some of you may have differing opinions on how valuable Jared Aberderis is to this offense. And Jeff Janis is a complete lightning rod when you talk to fans about his potential contribution to the offense, but to go free agent there and spend, you know, money, because these guys have to get paid minimums based on how many years they've been in the league. That's, you know, that's potentially tough to measure the ROI. I don't know where you're going to get your return on investment from. So the Lions, I'd have to say, I'm not convinced that they've done a ton. And the other thing we're going to talk about with them, obviously, that's going to affect Detroit, is they could go out and sign a ton of guys. They just lost Calvin Johnson. I mean, we're talking about arguably the best receiver in the game. So you don't just go out and replace somebody like Calvin Johnson. So, and here's another, and I get the trend of players retiring early and leaving the game soon. It's been going on for a couple of years. But, you know, we saw Barry Sanders leave after about nine seasons. Calvin's leaving after eight or nine seasons. So, in that way, I kind of feel for Detroit Lions fans, but, you know, I think they're kind of status quo. Then as far as the Vikings go, they've been kind of quiet. They haven't really brought very many guys in. I know they signed Alex Boone, the former Pro Bowl guard from the San Francisco 49ers, but I don't think they've done a ton. And so I think Green Bay is very well still in the driver's seat to try to hang out of the division and compete for a division title. I think it's going to be between those two teams again. It'll be Green Bay and Minnesota. Chicago, let's be honest, I mean, they're going to stick with Jay Cutler at quarterback, and they don't have Matt Forte back there in the backfield. I don't know what kind of offense they're going to be putting out on the field, even though Kevin White will be healthy and will actually be contributing. He was their first-round pick last year, wide receiver. So,
you know, it's fun to have the division be more competitive, but I still feel pretty good about Green Bay's chances. I still think they're, even though they didn't win the division this past season, I still think they're the team to beat even without any of the moves that they've made. So, you know, for whatever it's worth, you give some credit to Ted Thompson for putting the team in position to be that competitive without having any moves made so far in this offseason.
Well, there's a lot there to respond to, obviously. The big thing that I want to go over when it comes to this is, yes, the Bears have signed two pretty good inside linebackers. The question with Trevathan is the sum of the whole greater than the individual parts? Is Danny Trevathan a good player on a great defense? I don't know. Well, he's good. I do know that he was a good player on a great defense. Can he do that standing on his own? I don't know. Do I think the deal was reasonable to find out? Sure. Jarrell Freeman, he appears to be a solid player as well, but last year was really his first full season as a starter. And there's a lot there, and the Bears still have a lot of needs, guys. They have, if you consider their inside linebacker position set, okay, they have a defensive lineman in Eddie Goldman. He's pretty good. Outside of that, their front seven is not good. Pernell McPhee is an above-average player. I guess you could give them that. Their cornerback position, this year so far at free agency, the Bears have made a lot of noise. They've signed two inside linebackers. They've signed an offensive tackle in Bobby Massey and a corner in Tracy Porter. So in that time frame, they've signed two pretty good players at linebacker, a below-average right tackle, and a bad cornerback. And Tracy Porter, you can give me the info all you want about him. The quarterback rating against him last year was over 100, and that includes a game against the Packers where he was very good. So he did not have a good season last year. They brought him back. Kyle Fuller has been up and down. They don't know. The Bears don't know what they have in him. Their safety position is dreadful. They have a lot of needs on defense, and they had cap space to burn because they are a bad football team. Jay Cutler is their starting quarterback. I don't think that's as bad as a lot of Packers fans seem to. They have a year of Alshon Jeffrey who can't seem to stay on the field. Kevin White hasn't played it down. Their tight end, one of their best weapons, is not going to be on the roster next season because they can't figure out a way to get him to get along. Bears have a long way to go. One other thing about the Packers. As of 3 days in, they haven't added anybody from the outside. I understand that's frustrating, especially considering some of the deals that have been made. However, next year they get back a healthy Jordy Nelson, an in-shape Eddie Lacy, an offensive line that, as of today, is healthy. Obviously, injuries will always take their toll. They get organic growth from guys like Davante Adams, Jeff Janis, Jared Aberderis. Their young secondary, which was the strength of the team last season, is another year older, another year more experienced, another better year. They get to add guys in the draft. Their defensive line should be better. Their offensive line, like I said, should be better. They can't be worse at tight end than they were a year ago. They can't be worse in a running game than they were a year ago. Packers have a lot of things going right for them. I know you're frustrated with Ted Thompson because he didn't sign Danny Trevathan, and the Packers don't seem to have his answer on the roster right now. I get that. I get that we're frustrated that he didn't sign Ladarius Green because the Packers don't have a tight end on the roster of his caliber, and that deal was good. I get that. But there are other players still available that could be signed. And one thing to remember about the future, Bill Huber put out a very good story. There are four offensive linemen next year that are going to be free agents. David Bakhtiari, Josh Sitton, T.J. Lang, and J.C. Tretter. Those are four guys that could command decent money, and the Packers are going to have to re-sign at least two of them, you would imagine. Otherwise, their offensive line is a complete shambles. And in addition to those guys, there's Eddie Lacy. There's potentially Dayton Jones. There's other players that they have to re-sign as well. The cap applies to everybody. The teams that have been aggressive in free agency early on, for the most part, have been teams that have a lot of cap space because they're bad and they're not able to re-sign guys. And maybe the signature thing about why Ted Thompson isn't a terrible general manager. Malik Jackson gets $90 million. 44, I think, was the number of guaranteed. His guaranteed money is higher than that of Mike Daniels' total contract. And Mike Daniels is a better football player than Malik Jackson. Another one, Janoris Jenkins, guaranteed money. I believe was about at or more than Sam Shields. Sam Shields is a better football player than Janoris Jenkins. Ted Thompson does have some good attributes out of him. He's not perfect. I'm not going to argue that he is. But he's still a very good general manager, and the Packers are lucky to have him because they don't have to cut guys to create cap space. They don't have to restructure deals like the Miami Dolphins do to create cap space. The Packers are in good hands with Ted Thompson. And your guys' definition that I'm reading on Twitter of mediocrity, there's about 30 teams, maybe a couple less, anywhere from 26 to 30 teams that would take the Packers' level of mediocrity, quote-unquote, the last couple years. Any fan that grew up in the 70s and 80s, you know what mediocrity and bad looks like. This isn't mediocrity. Stop calling it that. My rant is over. I want to move on to a couple more things before we sign off for the day. Jason, we're getting close to the draft. The draft guide, I believe they said the pre-order date is March 31st. That's the end of this month. Draft is coming up in a month. We've talked a little back and forth about it. What are you thinking here as we get closer? You know, the Packers team needs, they're getting a little more defined based on their inactivity of free agency. What do you think here? Have you found a guy? I know you've mentioned Miles Jack before. Have you found a guy that you particularly like?
Yes, Miles Jack. It's tough because of where the Packers are picking. There's so many directions that they could go, so I don't know what is going to become available to them. I have some good news for you, and that is that I have softened my stance a little bit on Darren Lee because I've watched a little more of him. A lot of because you mentioned him and because I've seen his name pop up a couple more times. You know, after watching a little bit more on him, I think I'd be just as okay if the Packers went with him or if they went with Ragland, if they're going to do a linebacker. You know, if they're going to go linebacker, then that's fine. You know, the probability of best player available meeting need is, you know, I don't know how great it's going to be at that point. You know, when you get towards the back half of the first round, you probably can make the two marry a little bit because the elite level players, the absolute burners are already gone. So, you know, but they might, who knows? I mean, they may end up going with an offensive lineman. If they find a tackle that they like, they just re-signed Lane Taylor. So obviously they don't need interior depth. They would need depth on the outside of the offensive line. And, you know, if you're anticipating possibly the loss of an offensive lineman next year, when you have three guys that are coming up due for contracts, then you might want to pick a guy or two earlier than later if you want them to develop and be able to contribute soon. You can't count on a sixth rounder to do that. I know Ted's had a lot of success with his fours and fives in previous drafts with the offensive line. David Bakhtiari was a fourth. And I can't remember what round Sitton was, and that was many, many years ago.
Sitton was a four also.
Yeah, and he's had good luck. He's had good luck with that. But I think, you know, I'm going to trust in whatever the Packers do. Last year they took Demarius Randall. I don't know how many teams had a first-round grade on him. I, even as a Sun Devil, was confused by the pick, but he turned out to be really good. And let's not forget, as everybody's getting excited about Quentin Rollins, and I just took a peek on Twitter, and there's a lot of Quentin Rollins, and the expectations are high for him next year. Let's not forget that they also have Demarius Randall and Sam Shields. So, a corner, and Micah Hyde. So, I mean, a corner and defensive back next year, I think they're in pretty good shape. And I happen to profile the safeties for the draft guide, and so those are obviously the guys I know the best, and that's probably one position the Packers need the least. So I don't know that they're even going to go there at all in this next draft. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, guys like Ragland. I saw Kevin Dodd's name come up. You know, defensive line, he went Dayton Jones in 2013, and I like Dayton Jones. It was kind of a, you know, the safe pick. I think our lads had him mocked to the Packers. I could see them going that route if they want to build that depth. They have so many needs, perceived needs at linebacker, and that depends on how they feel about Barrington and Jake Ryan. I'd be surprised if they don't go there. But picking at 27, it's hard to know what's going to be available. So, I, much like everybody wonders if this will be the season that – the
Packers bring in a free agent and Ted Thompson gets busier in free agency, I also have to wonder if there's ever going to be a season before he turns it in, if he's ever going to trade up in the first round. And I don't mean back into the first round. I mean like trade up from their initial slot because there's a guy that they really, really like. I mean, you mentioned the compensatory picks. They can't trade those this year. They will be able to starting next year. So they'd have to maneuver and package some things together to do it, and it's very un-Ted Thompson-like. But it's just so tough to tell. I don't really know which direction to go. I guess I would just say nothing would surprise me. But those are some of the names that I've been kind of focused on.
Those are fair. To say nothing would surprise me is probably a good way to do it as well. I've mentioned Darren Lee, Leonard Floyd. That was another one. Noah Spence I've mentioned. Tackle-wise, you know, our guy Nate mentioned LaRaven Clark. I tend to think him as more a day-two type player. Jack Conklin, if he were able to fall that far, I think that he would be a worthwhile investment there. Defensive linemen, I think there's a wide range of those that could be worth an investment there. I really do think, though, that I understand the Packers have a dire need at inside linebacker, and maybe on the edge as well. But for the most part, there's not a huge need that this draft class fits, as far as the tight end position goes, at least. There's not a huge need that the Packers have to where they have to reach for a guy like Hunter Henry, for example, at pick number 27. I think that they could sit tight and take the best available player at linebacker, offensive tackle, defensive lineman. Why not? That would be the option that I would go with, at least. I think that they have a pretty good chance of netting a good player in that spot. So that's what I think of right now. Obviously, I have my names that I gave you. That's what I'm going to go with, and we'll get more and more into that as the draft gets closer. It's 46 days until draft day. So the Packers, that's where they make their hay. And obviously there's some time here yet to pass before draft starts. Maybe they do sign a free agent. I don't know. But that is how we are going to close today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. We are at Packer Pulse. You can follow me personally. I'm at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason at Jason Perrone. Thanks again to Coach Nate Clark, at Coach Nate71. Give him a follow as well. Appreciate your time and your insight, as we said. I want to thank our sponsors, Waukesha Sports and Mark Mayfield Sports. We miss doing game ball and play of the game, but unfortunately it's not football season. So we look forward to getting that back here in the next couple months. Draft guide, again, as I mentioned, pre-order dates and stuff, I'll tweet those out. I will get an exact for you. I believe at Jersey Al, GBP actually has those as well, but they are coming out at the end of the month. Pre-order dates, things of that nature are coming out soon. So we want you guys to get your hands on it. Jason and I are in it. Jason did the safeties. I did the interior offensive linemen. It was a very fun project. We're still working on getting some kinks out of it, but definitely a good investment, I think. It's a good guide. I've ordered the last two. I just haven't been a part of them. I enjoy it every year, so looking forward to that. But we look forward to our next show here. Hopefully we get some more news to talk about here in the next couple weeks. But thank you guys in the meantime for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signings.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.